Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge and this is your latest Manchester United news. We've got Amrim's double deal plan. We're going to talk about that. Also, some interesting stuff coming around Onana. It's not the end of an era. It's the end of an era. Let's be honest with you. Also, we've got interesting stuff around Qatar. Sir Jim Radcliffe. We'll talk about that as well. Project 90. Actually, quite a busy Thursday morning show to get into, to be honest with you. Apologies for being a bit late. You may have known I sat on my glasses and I've had to have this to hold them on because I sat on them. They've got tape all around there. So I went to get a haircut this morning and then I ran to get my glasses as well. So I've got a new pair now that just come off. You know, I don't need to worry about the band on the back. Positives. But two things before I get into the show. Saw a couple of people on the way. One of them, it was like literally 9:45. They said, Mark, I watch your shows. I said, I'm going to be late. He said, I'll be watching. So shout out to him. And then as I got round the corner, Angels stopped me, wants to be on the show. We had a quick chat, but I said, I have got to go. There's thousands of people waiting. So big shout out to them this morning. Then I got in the car, Man United news related, had the radio on, made a massive mistake. And Angels, there he is. There he is. Angels, E-N-G-E-L-S. Definitely him in the chat. Nice to have a chat with you, pal. But got in the car, driving over here to you good people, heard a certain radio station, had to say, Magic Radio, you've got a new customer. And Smooth Radio, even Saga Radio. I'll listen to any radio station instead of that now. I gave it one chance and I switched it off because basically they were talking about whether Amrim survives Christmas. And this was the brilliant analysis you get on that radio station. And I feel sorry for people who have to commute. I feel sorry for people that want to, you know, listen to football in lorries. You really do need to just put the United Stand on repeat because, oh my God, this is what they said on the radio about Ruben Amrim. Whether he'll survive till Christmas. Very lucky against Burnley. They didn't play well and they needed Bruno to rescue them. At that point, I was already reaching to change the station and then followed it up with, he's got to change the formation. This team doesn't work in this formation. And I thought, that's it. Magic Radio. Get it on. I was like, what the hell is a national radio sports station giving platforms to people like that? Apparently, we played badly against Burnley and we luckily won. I mean, I know it was a 3:00 kickoff and it's not easy to access. But if you're going to actually assess a game of football, please, for the love of God, watch it. It's propaganda if you don't. We should have been 4-0 up at half time. We messed it up in the second half, but we definitely deserved to win that game. And we definitely played well in the first half. So we didn't play well and we were lucky against Burnley. Even Scott Parker, the Burnley manager, said Man United are a really good team and we struggled against them. So what are these pundits talking about saying that we played badly against Burnley when the team, Burnley manager, literally said Man United are a good team? Also, yeah, I mean, the formation thing, the less the better. Right, let's get into the news this morning. Hope you're doing well. Big shout out to the Chart Show. Link's in the live chat. It's on the homepage. It dropped at 2 a.m. yesterday. Get involved in that. It's going to be very interesting next week. It's what I call exclusive content for you. We're not driven by anybody else. We're driven by you. So get involved in the Chart Show. But look, let's hit the news this morning. Lots to get into. Qatar, Sir Jim Radcliffe, Ruben Amorim, Project 90. But I'm going to start with the headline. It's been floating around this morning. It's been floating around this morning a little bit like a turd in a toilet that you can't flush, to be honest with you, because I just feel like, look, okay. So the story is Man United have a huge double deal plan. They're going to go for Anderson in January and then they're going to go for Belabor in the summer. Sounds good, doesn't it? And this is floating around the UK press this morning. Amrim's huge double deal plan. There's a few problems with this. Amrim doesn't control the purse strings. Amrim doesn't do the negotiating. Amrim's huge double deal plan is about as irrelevant as, you know, Mark Bronzebridge's plan to take over the world today. Like, it's just not going to work. It's not going to work, is it? Because Amrim's huge double deal plan would have happened 3 weeks ago because he wanted a midfielder then. So this needs to be, I mean, it just can't be a conversation in September that we all get excited about. I mean, Elliot Anderson in January and Belabor in the summer sounds absolutely brilliant. It really, really does. But it's September the 11th and in relation to that as well, this will never not be a day that makes me think of a certain event. And I know There's a lot going on in the world at the moment, and I can talk about that at the end if you want me to, but I'll never ever forget this day. And thoughts go out to everybody who's impacted and doesn't forget that day, September the 11th. Yeah, it was a day I'll never forget. And I don't think anybody else will forget who witnessed that horrific day all those years ago. But yeah, it is September the 11th. And in a footballing sense, it is incredible, really, that we are talking about double deals when we got to go with what we got. I think it feeds quite interestingly into the financials that, you know, the whole Project 90 thing that Sir Jim Ratcliffe is trying to implement is about raising £90 million of extra revenue each year. Financially, we are not in the best position. I was reading an article yesterday about United are effectively treading water. We've got our new financial results coming out very soon, and they're expected to be okay based on Europa League run, sackings, reduction of the wage bill. That's great. The trouble about financials is that you're always looking on your last year, and our last year won't be too bad because we sacked a load of people, we've reduced the wage bill, and we obviously had a good Europa League run, and that will have made us some money. I think we're really going to face the bite this year. Like, we can't really sack another half of the workforce, can't really trim the wage bill massively anymore, and we won't have Europa League or Carabao Cup midweek games between now and Christmas. So we are going to feel the pinch. And the question about Amrim's huge double deal for me is, where does the money come from? And that's going to be the interesting thing. And ultimately, the where the money comes from is results on the pitch. To get results on the pitch, you need a midfielder. To buy a midfielder, you need results on the pitch. So it's sort of like, it's going to be very interesting about what we can do. But look, I'd be very happy with Elliot Anderson. I'd be very happy with Belaber. And hopefully United do have a strategy to bring those players in. But the strategy should have been there in the summer, as we've said many, many times before. Moving on, I have to talk to you about Andre Onana. Apparently, the Pratt, a story came out this morning. I think it was in The Sun, so take it with a pinch of salt. But there's a few stories coming out around Onana this morning, one of which was that he was actually ignoring Ruben Amorim on the training ground towards the end. I mean, if I was Onana, I wouldn't be ignoring Amorim. If Amorim looked at me, I'd be giving him a hug and saying thank you. I mean, I'd be hiding after that Grimsby result. I literally would be in a wheelie bin. And actually, a wheelie bin would be better than him. I mean, if Onana had climbed into a wheelie bin and Amorim saw that wheelie bin, Onana would probably get picked because Amorim would probably say, we'd be better off with that wheelie bin in goal. And then Onana would be in the wheelie bin and he'd still be playing. But to be snubbing or ignoring Amorim is just hilarious. And I suppose it says a lot, if there's any truth in that, about, you know, the issues that we had with him. But also, I saw this morning as well, thought I'd bring it in. Apparently, Onana, where was it? Onana had offers from other clubs and also turned down a move to Monaco, as he was under the impression he was a key part of Ruben Amorim's plan. I mean, that to me, if true, exposes, again, how, you know, the problem wasn't necessarily between the sticks, but also between the ears. Because, look, you speak to people like Ben Foster and Watto, they will always say that goalkeepers are a different breed. Like, you have to be, because it's quite an isolating position. You do a lot of training on your own with other goalkeepers. On the pitch, you spend a lot of time on your own in your own box because everyone else is further up the pitch, unless you're shit, and then you do spend a lot of time talking. So you've got to, I wouldn't say, you know, you've got to have voices in your head or anything like that, but you're a certain type of personality if you're a goalkeeper. And I suppose what I'm saying is, you might, you know, have conversations with yourself where, you know, I'm not saying you've got a special friend if you're a goalkeeper, and you know, maybe you do, but maybe you have conversations where you know, you tell yourself you're better than you are. But if Andre Onana was turning down moves to Monaco because he thought he was part of Ruben Amorim's plans, I know for a fact that it was made very obvious to him that he wasn't back in March. I personally believe, and have had this firsthand, and I've told you many times, Onana was never told that he was at Ruben Amorim's number one this season. In fact, quite the contrary. Onana was told in very, very simple terms that they were looking for another goalkeeper and they would like him to go. What Onana decided to do was that if he didn't leave, how were they going to buy a goalkeeper? So he was under the impression that if he didn't leave, he'd still be Man United's number one. And obviously, he found out big time that wasn't the case when Bienda got picked against Arsenal. So I think what's happened here is Onana had a very big, you know, and I don't knock this. I think it's quite an admirable trait if you've got ability. I think he had immense self-belief that he could prove everybody wrong. And that is a very, 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 very good trait to have as a human being. But if I'm a chef and everyone says I'm a crap chef, and then I say I'm not, and then I go and give everyone food poisoning, you know, I've got immense self-belief, but I've also got a very big prison sentence. And I'm not saying that Onana should go to prison for some of the mistakes he's made. But he has obviously got a very, very warped sense of reality around his future at Manchester United. I mean, look, Amrin wanted to replace him. Wilcox wanted to replace him. I think he thought that if he didn't leave, he'd be the goalkeeper. But also, I'm not saying that footballers should be dwelling online, but how do you miss it? It's not just online. It's, you know, Gary Neville. It's Ben Foster. It's, you know, match of the day. It's bloody everywhere. It's not just fan opinion. Everybody was saying he wasn't good enough. And to totally miss that is quite surprising. And to believe that you could be Man United's number one. So interesting, but look, at the end of the day, he's been moved on. And that's the main thing. And we wish him all the best. Creeping East says, he's a new member. Welcome to Members Club. Thank you very much. He says, finally, after watching you in the channel for a long time, what are your thoughts on Neves, Gallagher and centre midfield position? Great channel. I'd have took Conor Gallagher. In fact, we were talking about it with Angels this morning. We both said we'd have took Conor Gallagher, of course, because we haven't got anything. So, of course, I would have took that. Ruben Neves, I don't know about Ruben Neves. When he was at Wolves, I thought he was decent. But the Saudi move thing just sort of, you know, I don't know what that does to a player, really. Patrick Lynch with a super chat says, Onana believing he was important to Amrim's plan suggests there are players in that squad that think they are for various reasons and they're untouchable. We really do need a proper clear out. Well, you know what? Patrick always comes up with a good point, and I think it's true. I think that what's really, really, really important, and you know, Corey says, correct, Patrick Lynch, is you know, you make a great point again. I don't blame Onana for thinking it's up to him to stay and he doesn't need to go. And he thought he was going to be Man United's number one. Because to be honest with you, as Patrick sort of alludes to, we have played this game for nearly a decade where really it's up to the player to decide what happens, not the club. Because we haven't been sufficiently ruthless enough to make players realise that when you're not wanted, you leave. Quite the contrary. When a player is not wanted, even if the fans are saying you're shit, players stay. They decide, I'm staying. And look, Harry Maguire is a good example. There was a time where Man United tried to sell Harry Maguire to West Ham. There was a time where players and fans wanted Harry Maguire out. Not players. Managers and fans wanted Harry Maguire out. And he decided to stay. Now, in the end, that's worked out quite well. But it doesn't escape the fact of, should a player be deciding they stay over the club that's trying to sell them and the fans that want them gone? Harry Maguire is an example of it working. And I'm glad it did. But there are plenty of examples of players who, Rojo, remember him? He just stayed. Casemiro is another one doing it at the moment. It happens at Manchester United a lot. So we can blame Onana, but ultimately he's not the first, and hopefully he will be the last, of players who decide they're going to stay. And it will be against what the manager wants and against what the player fans want. But Man United have created that environment where the player decides what they're going to do. And we need to change that 100%. I thought that was a fly then. It'd be flat. It's not. Is that? It's not. Definitely not a fly. So, good point, Patrick. How would Maynou play if we signed both Anderson and Belaiba? Well, Malachi, you're just expressing your opinion. You know, would you sign, if I said to Malachi, would you sign Belaiba and Anderson? I presume you're going to say no because you want Mayner in the team. You know what I'm going to say? You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say 100% yes. Because ultimately, if I'm going to play with two midfielders, I'd love to have five good ones. Because I'm not scared of competition for places. I'd rather have five good players going for two positions than three going for two. Because if I get injured, one injury, I've definitely got to play the other two. And what if one of them's out of form? I want competition for places. I think that that's the way to go. If I was a United player, I wouldn't want to be part of Amrin's plans. He's on a slippery slope and needs results. Hopefully starts against City, says Zova. I don't know what I can do with that comment, mate. So basically, you wouldn't be up for a fight. We shouldn't be at Man United then. Harley Thomas, thank you very much for your super chat. Right, what's this Qatari stuff? Right, okay, interesting. I want to talk about Sir Jim Radcliffe a little bit because effectively, Sir Jim Radcliffe, there was an article this week that Sir Jim Radcliffe is pulling his money out of the UK and is refusing to invest in the UK energy scene because of the tariffs. And some people are saying, well, if he's basically criticising the UK government, why will they do the regeneration project? So we'll talk about that in a moment. But I want to talk about the Qatar story first. So basically, when it was Sir Jim Radcliffe against Qatar a couple of years ago, I remember saying, I firmly believe that if we miss the boat with Qatar, I always call them Qatar. If we miss the boat with them, they will invest in another Premier League club because it's logical. There is so much money in the world at the moment, and football is the emerging market because it's a global sport. And there's a lot of people looking to invest, especially American hedge funds, etc. Obviously, the Qataris wanted Manchester United for status, but they can't get Manchester United. So that money is still going to be there to invest in a Premier League club. Funnily enough, I always said Spurs. I always said Spurs is perfect because amazing stadium in London, big fan base with the potential to grow. Almost could be the next Man City. You know, Man City had an amazing stadium because of the Commonwealth Games in an amazing city with a big loyal fan base that has the potential to boom if it's successful on the pitch. Well, lo and behold, since Daniel Levy's left, Spurs are a little bit unstable. And in the last few days, there's been talk of investment coming in from, guess where? Qatar. So I only bring it in just to say that, you know, missing out on that option doesn't mean that option will stay on the table for some fantasy deal in the future. I don't think the Glazers are going anywhere for at least 50 years, to be honest with you. I just can't see them ever going. It will just get passed down through generation and generation. But that money, I think, could end up going elsewhere. So, you know, just be wary of that. In relation to Sir Jim Radcliffe, do I think Sir Jim Radcliffe's... Well, look, ultimately, if you read the story properly, what it says is that Sir Jim Radcliffe, Ineos, and their energy, you know, investments are pissed off with the UK government because of the tariffs and the inability to invest and make profit. So basically, they're not willing to invest in the UK markets anymore. They're going to invest in the US because there's better returns there. This is very much a business headline. Some people have said, well, if Sir Jim Radcliffe is basically mocking the British government to go and spend in the US arena, then why would the British government go, oh, Sir Jim, here's a load of money to reinvest for us to invest in your product? It's almost a contradiction, isn't it? You've got Sir Jim Radcliffe, I won't invest in this shit government. And then the government goes, we will invest in something that's going to make you loads of money in Manchester. So some people are saying, is this going to be an issue if Sir Jim Radcliffe is effectively quitting the UK? Will the UK government quit on the regeneration project? Because Sir Jim Radcliffe is the big UK knight to front up what is effectively the Glazers project. The Glazers have had this in mind since 2017. The plans are there. So Jim Radcliffe's come in and sort of gone, oh, end of the day. But it's a Glazer project. And if he's now pulling out and mocking the UK government, why would they back this project? I'm not too concerned about it, to be honest with you. Ineos are a huge company with fingers in many pies, and where they choose to invest their money around energy is up to them. What we're talking about here is the regeneration project of an area that does need regeneration, that will generate huge infrastructure in an area that needs it, and huge job opportunities, and more importantly, a lot of accommodation. And the UK, look, I live in the UK, I don't do politics, but there is a housing crisis. You know, we have a huge expanding population and we don't have enough houses. So I just don't think the UK government are going to go, Sir Jim Ratcliffe's involved in this, he won't invest in the UK, fuck him, let's not do this. Like, this is, the government will not think of it like that. They will go, here's a way to do something really big in a city outside of London, around one of the most institutionally big football clubs in the world, in an area where we can put a load of accommodation, a load of infrastructure, make a load of jobs and make a big noise about it, and also make a bit of money from private investment. So I don't think it's going to make any difference, the regeneration project, realistically. And ultimately, I'd say the UK government needs Sir Jim Ratcliffe's billions more than it needs, more than they can say, piss off. And they'll probably be looking to lure him back with that. So I don't think it's a significant update at all. And my biggest concern around the regeneration project is that if the Glazers had pissed off and we had brought in, let's say, Qatar, we'd already be building the new Old Trafford, because they were going to build it with their own money. So, you know, you look at what's happened at Manchester City. They've got a mini stadium across the road funded by Abu Dhabi. If we'd been bought by Qatar, we'd already be building the new stadium and everything around it. My concern is, I think we will do it, but when? When's it going to start happening? I don't know. Look, I don't know, because I don't really spend a lot of time analysing major regeneration projects. It's not the sort of thing that gets me a box of tissues and I've gone too far. But I don't know. Could it start tomorrow? I don't know. I don't know what's holding it up. They're talking about 2030. Honestly, I don't want to see Old Trafford knocked down. But as a realist, the sooner we have that new stadium, the more money we make. And, you know, Fish and Chips says new stadium, how about a new team? It all goes hand in hand. If they're going to do it, I wish they'd get on with it, because talking about something never does anybody any good. So I don't know when it's going to start to happen. But look, by the time we've got Christmas out the way, it won't be too long until it's a year since we saw the bloody pictures of it. So it needs to get moving. Definitely does need to get moving. Thank you for that. Mod's doing some great work tonight. Respects, says Cameron. I haven't really looked at the live chat that much this morning, because I've obviously had a few comments to talk about. But I presume a lot of people are rocked, as, even my daughter came downstairs last night and said, I can't believe what I've just seen online. And I think we all know what we're talking about is the assassination in the United States last night. I'm sure it bothers a lot of people. All I would say on this is, because we are a community, is that this is why I don't do politics, for one. I don't get involved in politics. We're a football community and politics are very, very divisive. So I don't do politics in any way, shape or form. And secondly, I think that the social media with people who do politics is vile. So if you're reading people saying, I'm glad and stuff like that, I would just take yourself off social media, because trust me, there's some vile people out there. Some of them do it for attention. Some of them do it because they believe it. Just take yourself away. You don't have to get in arguments that you don't need to be in. Conserve your own goodness and don't go down to that level. What are my thoughts? I just think it's disgusting that anybody can be assassinated in that sort of situation. I think it's very, very sad. I don't really know anything about the person. As I said, I don't get involved in anything like that. I don't know what he said. I don't know what he stood for. Ultimately, there used to be a cleric in London, you know, the one with the hook. He used to stand in London every bloody week shouting stuff, right? A lot of people didn't agree with it. Some people did. I would never condone somebody assassinating him in the street. And he probably said a hell of a lot of stuff I didn't agree with. And he probably didn't like people like me or you. But I wouldn't want to see anybody getting assassinated on camera in front of their family in the street. And that's what I would say. So regardless of people's beliefs or anything like that. And I think we should live in a world where debate takes place because we're not all going to agree. And that's what we do here. I just think anybody who thinks it's good for somebody to be assassinated in the street is just confusing themselves with, you know, well, this happened here, that happened there. What's that got? You know, those things are all relevant as well, but it doesn't mean you stand for somebody being assassinated. I just think regardless of beliefs and stuff like that, I just don't think that's a good look for modern society. And I think it's a shame. And that's my thought on it. But as I said, I'm not educated on what it's all about or what was going on or, you know, what that person stood for and who people who disagreed with it. I just don't think it's a good look for society and the human race that somebody gets shot like that in front of the watching world. So there, we can move on from that now, surely. Where would you rather live, London or Manchester, says Reflex? Manchester. Yeah, I love London, but I think, you know, for obvious reasons, Manchester. Keel Robinson says, we need the next Belabour for £20 million, says Keel. Oh, well, I've said this before and I'll say it again. With regards to Belabour, it's a little bit like a bank robbery, isn't it? You know, we need old De Niro and co from the film Heat. Because we need to break into Brighton, we need to hack Brighton's scouting system and find out who it is they're going for next. The problem with this is, though, Brighton are probably so clever they're switched onto it. They're like, Man United are trying to hack our tactical system. Okay, I've got a great idea. Put a folder in there marked the next Belabour in big capital letters. Put an image on the folder of top secret. Leave it really easy to find, okay? Next day, they've hacked in and they've opened the folder. Good. What did you put in there? Trust me, this is going to be hilarious. They've just put a really shit player in there that's going to be rubbish from, like, France. You know, some 17-year-old who plays up front who's going to be the next Belabour. But, yeah, whoever Brighton are going for next would be of everybody's interest, of course. But, I mean, obviously, I don't know. I don't know. Really, the honest answer is that's all a bit of banter. But why is our scouting not as good as Brighton? You know, why do we not know who the next Belabour is or the next Caicedo is or the next Declan Rice is or the next Rodri? You know, there will be an abundance of midfielders that are going to be brilliant in the next 5 years. Are we looking at them? Are we looking at them? I mean, look, Elliot Anderson was at Newcastle and now Nottingham Forest and plays for England. Oh my God. What an amazing bit of scouting from Manchester United that is. Oh my God. They're amazing. That's like me making a Hollywood film and going and getting, you know, somebody's just won a bloody Oscar. Oh, he's found a great bit of talent there. Like, Belabour. Brighton midfielder. Oh, who would have thought to buy a midfielder from Brighton? There's not been many expensive midfielders from Brighton bought in the last 5 years, is there? So I think that we do need to be better at recruiting, definitely. 100%. Okay, no matter what path in life you walk, we can always have a respectful, intelligent debate where everyone feels safe, says John. Well, you should be able to, yeah. You should be able to. Relaxation Nation says we do actually scout quite well. We just don't buy them. Caicedo, Bellingham, and Haaland. And I think actually, you know what? It's a fair point. It's a fair point because I said it was a fair point, but I also think it's a fair point while my brain thinks we have definitely scouted amazing talent over the last 20 years. Like, the list is incredible, and I'm sure you could throw up names over the last 20 years that we just didn't move forward on. Arsenal didn't move forward on Ronaldo. So you can make mistakes. But I think from United's point of view, if a scout walks in and says, buy these players, and the owners say no, whose fault is it? It's not necessarily the scouting. The scouting could be fine. But then, was it not only a few weeks ago that we're reducing our scouting network to save money? So I don't know. I don't know. I think that it's really interesting to talk about Manchester United in a financial sense sometimes, because I just don't believe that you can cut and be good. I think at a point, the cuts start to make you worse. And you can only cut for so long. Like, as I say, if I'm running an office and we need to save money and I've got a staff of 100 and I say, sack half of them. And I sack half of them and I go to my boss, there's the savings. And my boss goes, well done for this year. You've done a great job. I go back to the office and somebody says to me, we're going to really struggle next year because this person you sacked used to do that. So that person's got to do it, but they've got to do their own job. We're going to struggle. We're going to have an increase in sickness. We're going to have an increase in, you know, inefficiency. It's not going to work. You've saved the money now, but we're going to struggle to do what we were doing last year output-wise. Boss knocks on the door again and says, you know all that money you saved last year? I need you to do it again. Can you make more cuts? And you know in the back of your head, I've already cut to the bone. In fact, we cut to the bone so hard, I think it's going to impact the way we will perform anyway. And now you're asking me to cut even more. And that's my worry with the United cuts is 50% is an incredible amount of cuts. And is it, you know, we saved a load of money. We saved a load of money. And then in year two and three, we're in trouble. I don't know. I think it's going to be very interesting to observe, because where do you keep making the cut? And also, forget The Office. Great TV series. Talk about the squad, right? Eriksen and Lindelof gone. Rashford's wages covered. Anana's wages covered. Rasmus' wages covered. Garnacho's wages were shit. So we've probably saved, what, let's say, I don't know, 50 million in wages this year. Next year, we need to save another 50 million. Casemiro goes. Maguire goes. A couple of others go. Are we replacing these wages or are we cutting these wages? Because if we're cutting the wages, surely the team's going to suffer. What I mean is, you can cut to a certain point. That's good. Wastage, great. But if you're cutting to save money, are you cutting to save wastage or are you cutting to save money? And that's something I can't answer and nobody can answer at the moment. We definitely needed to cut wastage. There was definitely some silly contracts. There was definitely, you know, Anthony, people like that. But what about if it just continues to cut and it goes beyond wastage? It's actually about saving money, saving money, saving money. That, in my opinion, will impact on us. Thank you very much, John. Brighton probably have a replacement already, says Dan Davey. Thank you very much. Seth, welcome to the Members Club. Appreciate you and Harley Thomas as well. Ranić is the best coach, scout. I think Vavel's a great scout, by the way. You know, we're back tomorrow night on That's Football with exclusive Bundesliga action. It's a bloody good game to watch if you're interested in the next wave of talent coming out of the Bundesliga. I mean, you look at this year, we've had Šeško, Liverpool have had Ekitike and Wirtz and Frimpong. Newcastle had Valtameda. There are others that have come in from the Bundesliga as well this summer. And there will be more next summer. It's probably the big, I'd say it's the league in the world at the moment that's the closest to the Premier League, the most entertaining. And there is a huge talent pool there. Leverkusen, Frankfurt tomorrow. Frankfurt have got some incredibly exciting players there. Leverkusen have got some as well. Obviously, I'm not even mentioning Leipzig. Why are we talking about the Bundesliga? Well, you can watch it on That's Football. But more importantly, Favel has an amazing understanding of that league. And I think we have a very, very, very good recruitment. I'm very happy we've got Favel. Where Wilcox lacks experience, I think Favel's track record is incredible. And we need to be tapping in earlier. You know, I mentioned, you know, United's double plan of going for Anderson in January and Belabor in the summer. In some ways, oh, yeah, yeah, sign me up. I'll have some of that pie. I can have a cup of tea, a pint of tea and a big piece of pie. Is there a better way to spend an autumnal afternoon, by the way? I know I'm old, but give me a mug of tea, a slice of cake, a comfy chair and a good book and a roaring fire with a nice view out the window and I'm very, very happy. But give me a slice of that pie. Anderson and Belabor. I love it. Brilliant. Brilliant. Nothing. No worries about that at all. Happy. Content. But is there not a part of you that goes Anderson and a really exciting midfielder from Leverkusen or Frankfurt or Monaco? I do think that fits in with what Vival is at the club for. And I do think that Manchester United Football Club will always be a football club that is intrinsically linked with youth. And if it comes through from 8 years of age, brilliant. But if it comes from Arsenal at 17, like Heaven and Obi, great. Or if it comes from, you know, was it Le Havre, like Pogba at 14, brilliant. So I like the idea of Belabor and Anderson, but it's going to cost you. I mean, Cunha and Mbeumo, yes, we needed the experience. I will never say they weren't good signings. But do we need to go and spend another £150 million on two midfielders? I don't think we do. I think you go big on one and young on the other. And I would like to see a Wharton or Belabor or Anderson type signing for maybe £60-70 million and a under £30 million signing from Leipzig or Monaco or something like that, you know. And I think that, or Stiller, you know, maybe Stiller, as Jakey says. So look, I'm sure most of you are going to say I want Anderson and I want Belabor. Personally, I think for where we need to go as a football club, especially in relation to financials, we can't just keep spending £130 million on two players. I'd rather spend, you know, 90 million on a really good signing and a younger player, because the next wave is coming through. And I think United have been very bad for many years in trying to buy the player that is already the next big thing, if you know what I mean. Paul Pogba at Juventus, we had to go and buy him even though we had him. And we've done that a lot. Sancho at Dortmund, we've done that a lot. I believe that, especially when you look at the age profile of people like Kimmich and Rodri, I think there's a next wave of midfielders coming through. And I think that we need to look at those types of players. And I think Vival is a real positive when it comes to that. Definitely. Theo says, I think Wharton's a class act, that the rest of his game goes unnoticed. He can disrupt and create with positional awareness. There's a reason Liverpool wants him in January. Well, I didn't know that Liverpool wanted him in January, but I do think he's a very, very good player. In relation to Wharton, Man United have been looking at him for an incredibly long period of time. I mean, we're talking 2 years easily. I think the problem with Wharton, similarly to Belabor, is that you could argue that maybe he's already out of our price range and out of our league, because he may already be a player that's going to go Liverpool, Arsenal, Real Madrid, you know, somewhere like that, which takes him out of our reach unless we're in the Champions League. So I think Wharton would be very good. You know what I know about Wharton, and it's not an age thing. You could figure this out as, you know, at any age, but it's the same thing I saw with Roy Keane at Nottingham Forest. It's the same thing you would have seen with Paul Ince at West Ham. It's the same thing you see with Declan Rice at West Ham. It's when a team that's not a traditional top six team has a player in it and you know they are absolutely the big reason that that team is doing well. And obviously Palace have got Gehi. He's brilliant. But, you know, Glasner's a great coach at Palace. There's no doubt about it. But when you look at that Palace side, you've got Gehi at the back. You've got Wharton in the midfield. You had Eze. Like, they have got three very, three players that are way too good for that team, with all due respect. Like, Gehi's good enough to play centre-back for Liverpool. Wharton's good enough to play midfield for Liverpool. And obviously, Eze's now playing for Arsenal. So, trust me, one of the big reasons Palace are doing well is Adam Wharton. And he can do the job. But he will come at a cost. He'll come at a cost. And like Jakey says, Stiller is the cheaper version of Wharton. And that's sort of what I'm saying. I do think that we do need to look for the cheaper options, certainly. Have an eye on Hugo Larsson at Frankfurt, says Leo. Well, tomorrow night, I know we've got live TV rights of the game in England and Ireland, but we are going to do a non-TV rights watch along as well, so we can get the whole community involved, because I think that's really important. But Ozan at Leverkusen is a more, sorry, at Frankfurt is a more attacking player, but Larsson is an interesting player as well. I think Frankfurt are going to be very good again this year, despite losing Mamouche and Akitike. They're a very good team. Out of 10, what would you rate Ruben as coach or manager, as class of 99? At the moment, I think he's a 6. At Manchester United, I think at Sporting, you'd give him a 9, but I don't care about Sporting. Sporting got him in the door. You're in the door now. At Man United, I'd give him a 6. You could give him a 5. You could give him a 4. You'd struggle to give him a 7. I give him a 6 because I think there are huge mitigating factors. I don't really care about last season. You know, when people talk about win percentages, I don't care. Our win percentage this season is 33%. You know, we've won 1 out of 3. That's all I care about, because until he had a pre-season, until he had his own signings, I wasn't going to start. I don't care about last season. Some of you do. That's your right. I and many others don't count last season as anything other than a shit show that was shambolic. But I can't. This is where it starts for me. So when I watch the game on Sunday with you, I don't want to just see United get beat 7-0 and down tools. That worries me. If we lose, I want to see a performance. Same with Chelsea. We need to start seeing performances now. We need to start seeing the progress now. There can't be any more Grimsby's. You know, we've got to start seeing something. Yub says, AI data-driven decisions improve scout quality. I don't believe that. I don't believe it. No, I don't believe it, because I think, you know my stance on stats. I'm not really up for statistical, tactical, TikTok bullshit of football. I've watched football for over 40 years. I used to go and watch football with my granddad. He used to manage a Sunday morning pub team and Saturday afternoons. I just loved watching football from a very, very young age, like most of you. And to me, it's always the eye test. I'll look at a player and I'll go, that's the best player. And I'm normally right. I normally can find the best player at amateur level. You'll go, that's the best player. Or you'll have 3 or 4 that you like. Bruno Fernandes in the chart show. Check out Bruno Fernandes' position in the chart show. And then read the comments. Where the chart show was done by you. It was the first 3 games, aggregated score for each player into top 10. Read the comments on the chart show. The Bruno hate's ridiculous. Literally voted for by thousands of people with all different opinions. Bruno on the AI stats test is probably worth £300 million. Bruno on the eye test is divisive. You can't argue with those two things. On stats, he's the best player in the world. On the eye test, he splits opinion. Fair? Fair? Not saying he's shit, not saying he's good. That's always been the way with Bruno. I love Bruno as a number 10. Statistically, he beats anyone. Eye test, people go either way. And that's why the eye test, I think, is always important, because there are stats that, look, it's like Michael Owen saying at 17 he was way better than Rooney because he scored more goals. Hold on a minute. Goal scoring's great. You won a Ballon d'Or. Well done. But Wayne Rooney on the eye test at 17 was 10 times what you were. On pure talent, he was generational. You were just a top-class striker. You know, Wayne Rooney doesn't need to score 50 goals a season to be better than Michael Owen at 17. It was just It's the eye test. It's the eye test. I mean, Gascoigne's stats probably don't measure up to Frank Lampard. You're going to fucking laugh if you think Frank Lampard was anywhere near as good as Gascoigne. So the eye test is always going to be the most important thing. And that's why I think with Favel, we have somebody really good if we trust him. Of course, you know, the elephant in the room with Favel is if Šeško fails, you, the press, maybe the club are going to blame Favel. And I think that's the one we need. We need Šeško to do well anyway, but we need Šeško to do well for Favel because he is the guy who is going to bring in the £20 million midfielder from Leipzig that's going to end up being the next Kante or Frankfurt or something like that. Favel is the key to the European market. I think Wilcox has got a good grasp of the English market, but I think Favel opens the door to the Bundesliga, the French league, etc. Christian says, if we sing Belieber, we need one more player to cover his position when he goes to the Cup, African Cup. He'll be a Brighton player for the AFCON this year, mate, because it's in December. The AFCON concern that people had has sort of been diluted, hasn't it? Because when we were linked to Belieber, people were going, that's Onana, Belieber, Mazraoui, Ahmad. I feel like I'm missing. Mbeumo. Whereas now we didn't sign Belieber, we've got rid of Onana. So it will be Mazraoui, Ahmad, and Mbeumo. And as we know, if Mount's fit and Cunha's fit and Xerxes fit and Bruno's fit, we've got coverage in the 10. None of our midfielders will be off to the AFCON. And we've got coverage at centre back as well. So it won't be too bad, hopefully, as long as we don't have injuries. What do you think about the media constant saying that Amrim can't shape and coach young players considering Maynou can realistically leave? Artak, I tell you what, the positive about getting my new glasses and a haircut this morning was putting the radio on and switching it off. I cannot believe how persistently idiotic the nonsense that gets written about Amrim is. But that's Man United, isn't it? Yeah, that's just Man United. Okay, thanks everyone for watching this morning. Enjoyed it. Good to be... good. I'm sorry it's slightly late, but I wasn't as late as I thought it was going to be. So I'm very happy about that. We're back at 2 o'clock. Don't forget tonight, unless something major happens news-wise, I'm not intending to do my preview as a pre-record. I'm going to do it live at 8 o'clock tonight. So the Manchester Derby live preview tonight. Got loads of topics to talk about it. Please do join me for that. And check out the Chart Show, because the Chart Show can go again. It's a cult classic. It's a weekly top 10. Get involved in it. Support it. And, you know, it'll be back again next week. Thanks, everyone, for watching. Speak to you later. After shows are at 8 o'clock, Tom. Not on a morning show. Sorry. Speak to you soon.